How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
Menards is your one-stop shop for all your summer essentials. Whether you're stocking up on everyone's favorite snacks, making a patio perfect for entertaining family and friends, or getting ready to gather around the grill, Menards has everything you need for your get-togethers all summer long. Save big money now at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning into Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 23. We got to be a fly on the wall for this week's conversation with Ryan Wolf about his podcast, Guilt. Today we are sans Janet, but Bob and I are here to get into your listener questions, which we don't have a lot, but I know we have a lot to talk about, and your listener theories. But before we get into that, do we have any housekeeping?
Yeah, so I can't really get into what exactly is going on. But I'm working on a project. You guys will all be privy to it soon. But it's going to require me to travel to New York City next week. I literally about 2 hours ago just got that call. So I don't know what next week may be normal, just like this, depending on the travel days, if I can stream from a hotel or whatever. So just, I guess, just be aware that there may be some glitches. If you're somebody that likes to watch the live streams when we do these, it may not be Tuesday night. It may be, I don't know what's going to shake out next week. I'm going to be gone from like Tuesday through Friday, which is a little tricky, but we'll get it figured out. So just pay attention. We'll post on socials and stuff whenever we're going to be doing anything. As far as any other housekeeping, there's not a whole lot. The pre-gamers just heard our patrons just heard the whole entire soup to nuts story.
The soup to nuts
of my vacation. But short version is Becky and I had a wonderful, beautiful time. We took a 2-day train ride out to Libby, Montana. We spent 5 days there. We read a lot. We went hiking. We went thrifting. I thrifted. I didn't tell you that.
I didn't. Yeah, you did not tell me
generally,
that.
Generally, me thrifting with Becky means me following Becky around.
Yeah, holding whatever she picks up.
Yeah, while she thrifts.
Yeah.
But you know, we've got the cabin being built, so she was looking for decorations for that. And like, we're in one of the little antique shops, and I'm like, look at this. I don't know what it is, a little vase or something that has like a bear and a deer on it. And I found it, and I thrifted
this
it.
This shouldn't be for this podcast, but as you said that is probably one of my favorite memories of us going to the Berkshires. Was us just wandering around the antique stores. Truthfully.
Yeah. Like, truth we be talked told, about that.
That was better than, I love the trip. Don't get me wrong, Josh. Love the trip. But just like the memory of it is like my favorite memory of the whole trip.
Yeah. And that's kind of, we talked about that because we did a lot of, because we didn't get the best weather while we were in Libby. So we did a lot, like we went into Standpoint, Idaho, and we thrifted there. And we went to like every little town we went to, Whitefish, Kalispell, Libby, Troy, like everywhere we went. Like we just found like the little bitty antique and we had to go to a little one in Troy because we got so much shit that we had to thrift a suitcase to put our thriftings in because we didn't have any room to put our stuff in. But yeah, I found that little thing and I was like, I just realized that I'm into this. Usually I'm just like humoring Becky while she's doing it. And then I found, and I'm pretty proud of this find, found an old like 90s Eddie Bauer goose down jacket for $38. That's right, guys. You heard it here first. $38. Immediately went back and looked it up. That coat's worth like $250.
Oh,
it's a steal.
It is a steal.
It's a steal.
It is a steal. I love the joy in your voice, buddy. I love the joy in your voice. It's so amazing.
Yeah, real world hasn't sucked the life out of me yet.
I'm so happy you're back, though.
Yeah.
I missed you last week. It's weird. we do this week in and week out, and you'd think like taking a week off would be like, oh, this is refreshing. And I'm like, when we take a week off, I miss you guys. Like, I genuinely am like,
I do too. I was so bummed Janet couldn't make it today.
Yeah.
Because didn't she miss? Well, she was here the last one, but the one before that she missed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is like my time to catch up with my friends, including all of you guys in the chat. So anyway, yeah, we didn't have a lot of questions about guilt, or none, I don't think, about the podcast. Hopefully you guys are listening to it, because I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I listened to a little more of it. I did not finish season 6 yet, but I listened to some more of it on the train. I did talk to Ryan a little bit because he had, did we talk about in the podcast that his wife was pregnant?
He had 2 children at the time of the podcast. I don't know if he talked about being pregnant currently.
I think it was. And I'm talking out of school here. He's posted about it, but his wife sadly had a miscarriage like shortly after we did that interview.
That's so sad.
And Ryan's one of those guys, like, I don't know, you just connect with these people from, you know, he's all the mm-hmm. way in New Zealand, but you know, I love him to death, and you know, I consider him a friend. And so, yeah, I was chatting with him via email on the way back, because I saw he made a post because somebody, think about this too, guys, like somebody had made some shitty comment to him on social media and just like went after him. And he was just like, you don't know what people are going through.
100%.
And then he kind of shared that's what was happening. Yeah. Anyway, just
no.
Yeah.
His podcast is fabulous. I love the production style. You told me that going in that I would love the production mm-hmm. style, but I love the production style of that podcast. And phenomenal. And it's really, I don't know if this is, it's serendipitous that he was your last episode of True Crime Binge, but the podcast is so interesting and so well put together. And I know you talked about it in your episode, your interview with him, about that he is the production team on that.
Yeah.
Which is wild, because I know what goes on this side, and I've mm-hmm. done it myself. And my podcast that I did was straight interview. So it's very easy to edit.
Right.
And that was a pain in the ass. I can't imagine.
I still, after we got off the pod, we chatted for another hour after we got off the interview mm-hmm. that day, talking about a bunch of things, but we talked about that. And I'm like, man, I don't know how you do, because you understand the way he's doing that podcast, where he's just rolling tape all day, mm-hmm. right? And in true David Ridgen style, right? Yeah. Just get it all. That way you capture those awesome moments. So you have all this, you know, so in a day's time, right? So you've got maybe 10, 12 hours of audio to sift through. If you're doing a really good job, which when I had Mike with me, Mike was pretty good about like taking notes. He would literally look at our recorder and be like, oh, there's a thing we might use. And he'd write little notes so you could find it later.
Mm-hmm.
He's by himself. I don't know how he's going to do that, because it's tricky, because you got to find those spots. And then you go and you interview people. And so I'm going to interview a couple of people. So then you got all those hours of audio to deal with. And you don't use the full, you know, if you hear 5 minutes of an interview on a podcast, that was probably a 2-hour interview. And you're just grabbing the pieces out of it that fit into the story where you're telling the story. And then you got to, you know, find those and then write the script. And then, which is tricky, because you got to know what pieces you're putting into it
mm-hmm.
from all that other audio to write the script, record the script, and then edit it, and then piece it all together, and then put the music in. It's just, I'm like, I don't know how the hell he does it.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I have no idea how he pulls that off.
You know, on a production standpoint, which is the one thing I have a few notes written down for myself, but on the production aspect, the whole idea that he brought up in your conversation, pardon me if I'm getting the wrong country, but the fact that Australia or New Zealand specifically asked him to take down part of his podcast is fucking wild to me.
Right. And that he did. He had to do it.
I mean, he had to do it, but like, that is wild that it's like.
Well, it shows the kind of impact that he's having.
Right. Right. And like I said, I apologize. I can't remember which country it was off the top of my head, but. Just the fact that the Supreme Court basically issued a ruling that he had to take down because it could hurt this retrial, just shows you the impact he's having in the girth of his podcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, how it's truly out there and it's affecting real change.
Yeah, it's all, and I wish like Janet is, so most of you guys know Janet travels around, does like conventions, like cons all the time. So she's around tons of people, and somebody gave her a bug and she's lost her voice. So she can't be there, but I was bummed. I'm always bummed if she's not here, but she went through and said she like binge. She listened to all of season 3 and season. So I'm trying to get through season 6. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard season 3. She's listened to all that. So I'm curious. That's on my list now it's summertime. It's mowing season. So I probably get some good listening in.
Yeah.
So 2 people said something in the chat here. One said that he's got another podcast called, is it Veil? The Veil. And then somebody said that he has another podcast about climbing Everest. Is that The Veil? Is that the one that's about? Because interesting, that's what we were talking about one of the things we were talking about after the podcast was over, because most of you guys know that I've talked about, you know, that I try, at least once a year, I try to get out west and go, you know, get in the mountains, do something very hard and push myself and suffer. And like I said, Ryan and I are kind of two people. We get along really well, you know, mm-hmm. and that's one, like he does the same thing. Like he's doing this like 7 summit challenge where he goes to like different countries and like climbs mountains. And he told me like he climbed Everest. Just listen to the Everything I Missed update. I have not heard the update on that one. I'm reading the chat for those of you that are listening to this. Who was the podcaster that I had on that did the Everything I Missed? I've talked to so many people, I can't remember the name. The Everest one is called Journey. Okay. Anyway, we'll get back to what we're talking about now, but that's what happens. You guys don't ask a lot of questions. So we're just going to talk about what we want to talk about.
Stephanie Tinsley?
Yes, Stephanie Tinsley. That's right. Yep. Well, Troy said Kathleen Tinsley, but I think it's Stephanie. It was Stephanie Tinsley.
Okay.
That was early on in season 18. I'll have to check. I might have to, if there's a big update, I might have to have Stephanie back on.
Yeah, Vail looks like it's another true crime podcast.
Yeah.
Where the journey is his climbing Mount Everest.
Mm-hmm.
There is a, this is way off topic. Sorry, I'm in the weeds. You talked about him doing the 7 summits. There's a cool documentary called 14 Peaks on Netflix that's a guy doing that he's trying to climb the 14 highest peaks in the world.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Way off topic. I know.
Well, it's kind of on topic. So the production style is really cool. The one thing we talked about, we wanted to talk a little bit more about was that whole no body, no bail.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. And I'm glad you guys touched on it very minutely, but you kind of touched on both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very interesting concept, you know, because in his podcast, in Guilt, they talk about how they were really pushing for it because you want closure for the family. And I 100%, I'm with the family on that, right?
And what's interesting about that too is I think it's important to note, like there's this thing, closure, we talk about, and there's always this like, is there really such a thing? But mm-hmm. in a case like this, I think there really is, in the fact that it's not just like, I, you know, my loved one died and I'm going to get closure when the person's convicted. I think that's a very different thing than my loved one disappeared and I don't even know where they are.
Yeah. We're saying they're deceased, but I don't
know for sure. Like how can you, I try to think, and it's like, it's a dangerous place to put your mind there, but like, how could you deal with that? Like,
well, and you think you hope beyond hope that it's not true.
Right. Even for the family that he's talking to in the podcast,
mm-hmm.
like there's got to be at least a small place in the back of your mind that's like, but what if?
Mm-hmm.
Every time you see one of those stories where somebody who's been missing for 20 years, you know, shows up and they were locked in somebody's basement or something, you got to think, what if that's my kid?
Exactly.
You know, so the closure is a very real thing mm-hmm. in this situation.
Yeah. So it's such a hard topic because I do feel like with the family, you want that closure. And if that's the means to get it, if that's the means to, for lack of a better term, force the killer to, you know, put out where the body is.
Right.
Like, I'm for it. But then you have the other side that you guys really touched on was like, if someone's innocent, they don't know where the body is.
And so how can they be paroled?
Yeah.
I should have asked, and I can't believe I didn't. I just popped my head. I'm curious, like, how many times it's worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to look up.
Yeah, like since that law's been out, how many people have said, okay, fine, here's the body?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder if that has even happened.
That's a good question, because I've only thought about it from this very topical of like thinking about like the family aspect of like mm-hmm. really wanting closure, you know, and the idea of like if the person is innocent, there's no way they can help, regardless of they fight and fight and fight,
right?
Which is what in season 6, not to spoil anything, but I think you guys touched on it pretty in your own episode, but like in season 6 of Guilt, he talks about that, where like this guy's maintaining his innocence, even though they truly believe he is guilty, he's been convicted. Right. There's enough circumstantial evidence to convict him, but he's still maintaining his innocence that he didn't do it. But also that could be because they think he's hiding other bodies.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I'm excited to get through the rest of it, because there's a lot of layers to the conundrum. Like, we look at it from the family side and in the broad picture of what this law means. But then like from him, it's a weird situation. If their theory is correct, which the idea is, they think he won't give up the location of the body because he probably, because they think he was involved in these two other murders, and they think they'll probably find the other two bodies there too.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't get paroled because he would get charged with murder from the other two. But then looking at it from, like, let's say if he is guilty of all three, what a weird place to be in. It's like, so I either don't tell him where the body is and I stay here, you know, I don't get paroled.
Uh-huh.
Or I tell him where the body is and I get charged with two more murders and then I don't get, I guess, I'm kind of answering my own question as I'm saying it, because in New Zealand, like, he's not sentenced to life. Like, he'll get out at some point.
Yeah.
I believe, right?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, at least this way is it. But if they charge him with two more murders, then he's not going to.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And how do you, this is a very opinion-based question for you. In the podcast, and I think you guys touched on it too, they're talking about his defense team and his defense lawyers are kind of pushing back against this, saying, well, this wasn't a law when we were convicted, or when he was convicted. Yeah. How do you feel about a circumstance like that, where there is a law put in place post-conviction that what then determines your conviction, which is prior to this?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little bit nuanced. So I think of, like, let's look at something more like very easy for us to wrap our brains around in the United States. All the people that are in prison for marijuana charges.
Mm-hmm.
And they're serving however much time for having a drug on them that has been deemed completely legal now.
Yeah.
Like for them to do the same thing today would not be a crime, but they're still serving time for it. And there's some interesting aspect that, you know, my feeling is just everybody should be just let out, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in jail, in prison for a marijuana crime and it's legal now, you should be let out. But then there's also the argument to it of, but they broke the law. Like, when they did it, they broke the law.
Right.
So it's like, you know, if the speed limit's 55 and you get a ticket for doing 65, and then a year later they change it to 70, you still were speeding when you did it. You know what I mean?
That's so correct. That's a good way to look at it.
In this case, I don't have a problem with it, because it's not a thing that he was like, his conviction didn't hinge on it. You know, and the parole is not guaranteed. So it's not like they're saying you've got a 10-year sentence, and then 8 years into it, they say, if you don't tell us where the body is, you've got a 20-year sentence.
Mm-hmm.
That I would have a problem with, because the judge or the juror, whoever issued the sentence back then, when they put it into effect, that was the law. You know, that was the number they landed on. You can't change that later. But in this case, we're talking about a hypothetical parole.
Okay.
So that's the only reason, that's why I wouldn't have a problem with it, because they're saying, you know, in a few years, you've got a chance to go before a parole board and possibly get out. And then later, before you come to that point, they say, by the way, this thing that you haven't done yet, go to the parole board, is going to hinge on whether or not you give us the body. I don't have a problem with that. Now, where I would have a problem with it would be if it was, the extreme version of this is your 10 years or whatever comes up, you get paroled. I think it was 15 years in this case, actually.
Mm-hmm.
You get paroled, and then 2 years later, they're like, oh, no, there's a no body, no parole rule. We're going to put you back in prison.
Yeah, that would be.
So I think that's where the extremes are at. But the fact that we're talking about a hypothetical possible parole coming up and they change the conditions, you haven't hit that date yet. So in my opinion, I don't see any issue with making that change.
Okay. I thought it was an interesting argument when he brought it up, because I don't want to say I could see both sides, but I can see it. I can see why there's an argument there in place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought about that. I thought a lot about it after the fact too. And that's why I kind of had that answer ready, I guess, is because I had to think exactly what you asked. Like, do I have a problem with that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of where I landed with it, is I disagree with his attorney that there's, like, you were never guaranteed parole to begin with.
Right.
You know, and it hasn't happened yet. They constantly will change rules before you get up to your parole date. So I can't imagine that a court either would hear that argument.
The other thing that's really fascinating about Ryan is the fact that he does have like a law background, because which is great for the podcast, but it's also interesting for me knowing that he's bouncing between two countries.
Yeah.
Right. And to say it ignorantly, you don't realize all the time that New Zealand and Australia are not as close as people assume.
Right.
Like, yes, they're in the South Pacific, but they're not these two land masses that it's like just a hop, skip, and a jump. Like, it's an ordeal, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I'm assuming that there are definitely different laws in place. So for him to be able to do this in two different countries, I mean, imagine you going right now to England.
Yeah, and trying to understand the law there.
And you're gonna be sufficient, but to be like fully engaged and understand what's going on is really difficult, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's interesting too. And I do want to circle back to, because Teresa in our chat had mentioned that it's up here a little ways, but her stepbrother, and I think she's told us that before, that her stepbrother's been missing since 2016, and it sucks not knowing. And I think that, just to kind of put a button on what we were talking about earlier, the whole closure idea, I have to imagine that, you know, there's this whole process of grief that you have to go through to really process it. And I don't know how real and effective that is. It was something that traumatic, right? But at some point you're trying to get to acceptance. And it just would seem to me that if you have this like nagging doubt that maybe this person is still alive, I just don't see how someone can ever fully recover and start to get through that grieving process with you not knowing, which is why I think when I really put it to the test, my own like moral and ethical test, I'm in support of the law. I think if the result is that because again, yes, there's a part of it's like, yeah, but what if you're innocent? But the thing is, in the United States, like Ed and Kenny Snow were exceptions to that rule. Generally, in the United States, you're not going to get parole. If you don't admit guilt, you're not going to get paroled anyway. Right. It's not a thing that, like, getting paroled for a violent crime without, you know, admitting guilt, showing remorse, is not something that's typically going to happen anyway. So I don't think it will have the, like on paper, it's like, yeah, but what about the innocent guys? Like, well, most of the time, those innocent guys aren't getting paroled anyway.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So I don't know if we have a whole lot more to talk about guilt. We didn't get a ton of listener questions, but we can move on if you want, because we do have a few questions about other things.
Yeah, because I do want to talk about one of the West Memphis 3 stuff.
I know there's some big stuff there, but let's do an easy one first. Carl asks, are there any updates on a new season?
I don't have a case locked. I've got two cases that I'm looking at, but I just haven't found the perfect case. I'm looking with, there's a gentleman who's been writing me, and we've been communicating back and forth, and he sent to me some materials about his son's case. Involves an arson and murder that I'm interested in, but I need to do a little more digging. I'm not convinced yet that pretty much for me to get to the point where I'm ready to do it on a podcast, I got to be pretty well convinced that the person's innocent, and I'm just not there yet, but I'm still, now that school's out, I have a lot more time to dedicate to this, and that's primarily what I'm doing right now, is doing a lot of reading of case files and materials. I have another case that is interesting me. And then I just literally today, I went to the P.O. box and I had a jail mail I was reading right before you got here. I started to look up some case facts on it that is kind of Jennifer Jeffley type of situation where, but I don't, it's weird. There's a pile of charges where there's two guys that were convicted, but it was like, there was a charge for like assault and armed robbery, and then there's kidnapping, and then they added a murder charge to it, which I don't understand how that happened yet. But then they convicted this woman as being the lookout. And according to, I've literally have read her letter and a couple of things I found online an hour ago. So I don't know much about it yet. But it's intriguing to me because she says in her letter, and I did look up the docket where she has filed pro se motions for habeas, which means she wrote it herself. She wasn't represented. We're saying they found new evidence where the spot where they said she was a lookout, and it was kind of, sounds like it's like an aiding and abetting thing. Like they're claiming she was across the street in a car as a lookout when this happened. So they charge her with all that stuff. That's what I mean by kind of a Jennifer Jeffley type of situation. But she says there's like surveillance footage that shows she wasn't there. So.
Wow.
But I got to look more into that case. So yeah, Carl, I think who asked that question, where I'm working on it. But as I said, I really want to make sure that we've got kind of, there is no perfect case, but a case that kind of checks all the boxes for me. I'm convinced they're innocent. And I really want somebody that doesn't have other media coverage, doesn't have somebody else already helping them. And particularly probably not represented yet by an attorney, because we just keep running into good problems, but their problems none the same for production. If someone is represented by an attorney, because then they don't want you to share everything. And, you know, they kind of, in many cases, will hit the brakes once you start to make some traction.
Yeah.
Which would be like the super interesting part of the show and letting our listeners engage and help the way that we do. When we get to that point, we get the, okay, well, now we got to stop talking about it because we're going to use this and litigate it. So still looking. I'm not sure. I can't give you a date when, because I've got to find the case and I got to start traveling and doing interviews and all that stuff and get all that stuff knocked out. But so if I had to put a guess on it, I would guess probably like beginning of September, I'm hoping. Could be sooner than that. But that what that gives me is it gives me the summertime when I have time to travel and do stuff to like get out and do all the background and get boots on the ground and do interviews and stuff like that. So still working on it. Don't have a case picked out just yet.
So this comes up every week and we finally have a little bit to talk about. People constantly ask about the West Memphis 3 if there's any updates, and there is some stuff going on right now. So first, Veronica says she saw a post by Damien saying testing results could be July at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty well connected to it, but I get everything kind of passed to me. I did talk to Damien quite a bit today, but a lot of it I get passed to me kind of third party. And, you know, we heard first of the year, and then we were thinking maybe June. Now, the latest update is they're thinking that we should have results by July. I don't know what's going on. I've heard that the prosecutor who originally was going to let everything be tested is now only doing ligatures. But then I've heard from someone else that's involved with it that the reason it's taking so long is because they're testing a bunch of hairs they didn't know existed. So I don't know exactly what's going on.
Man, I hope it's that last part.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the ligatures will be enough, but also, you know, that's the whole thing was we got this shot and the prosecutor agreed to testing and we said, well, then let's test everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it all. And that was, remember when we had George Bradley or George Jared interview Terry Hobbs for that thing Jim and I did at CrimeCon several years ago. And, you know, his answer to, well, he told George in one interview that they should just burn all the evidence and be done with it. But then when he knew he was doing an interview that was going to be broadcast, he said, oh, I think that if they're going to test it, they need to be fair and test all the evidence, not just the ligatures,
mm-hmm.
which to me felt like a bluff on his part. Like, well, they'll never do that.
Right.
Well, and from, you know, at least I know from Damien's side, it was like, good idea. Let's test everything. And that's what we thought was going to happen. I don't know. There's a bunch of stuff really up in the air right now with it. But what we do know, what I want everybody to rest assured, is the evidence is at the Bodie lab. It is being tested and we will be getting results hopefully sooner than later.
Man, I really hope so. And hopefully they are testing more than just the ligatures.
Yeah.
I mean, you've said it numerous times. The ligatures should be enough, but it'd be great if they're testing more.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems that, like I said, one of the updates I got was that things were getting delayed because there was a lot more hairs for them to test than they mm-hmm. thought. And then the next thing I hear, it's like, well, they're only testing ligatures. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
And how long have they had this? How long have they had the evidence?
October?
That's what I thought. I thought it was towards the end of last year.
Yeah, it was last fall.
Last fall. Okay. So we also have a comment from Ellen. And I don't know how much you want to touch on this, but I'm going to read the comment and you can address it as you want. Okay. Ellen mentioned some posts by Jason definitely, she would like you to address it personally.
Yeah. So when you guys are hearing this Friday, it'll be kind of old news, but we've talked a little bit about this before. Jason Baldwin, on a number of occasions, has come out and just really said a lot of negative things about Damian, about the process. He seems very bitter towards Damian. I can't speak to what's going on with Jason's state of mind. There was a time when we were kind of close. The last time I texted him, he never texted me back. Which I suspect, based on what I'm seeing him posting, is because of my relationship with Damian. I don't know that for sure. So I don't want to speak to what Jason's thinking, but I'll address this because I was very bothered by what was saying. Number one, because, you know, there needs to be a united front right now. What we're trying to do is solve this thing. I don't see any advantage in lobbing insults back and forth at each other. Clearly, anybody that is on social media knows, like, there's, you know, the relationship you saw between Damian and Jason in Paradise Lost does not exist anymore. They definitely do not get along anymore. And there could be I have my ideas of what's going on with that, but that's just my thought, so it's not worth sharing. There could be any number of reasons why that's the case, but that's the situation. And Jason, on a number of occasions, has made posts like this. So essentially what he posted today, and if you guys go look at it, if you're interested at his, and the only reason I'm addressing this is because there's just some things that are just not right about what he said that I feel like, and I know Damien's not going to address them, so I'll address them. Not at his request, by the way. He doesn't know I'm doing this, but it really bothered me. Essentially, Jason is posting how, so this is what happened. A couple days ago, the same journalist and writer I was just talking about, George Jared, who's written about this case many times for decades, he's been writing about the case, wrote an article where he was kind of updating what was going on. And he walked in the article, walked through the process, and it was all based kind of from Damien's perspective, where it was, you know, how Damien's been fighting for this and he's filed the motion, da 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 da. What seems to have happened, that really struck a nerve with Jason, who feels that it seems like he feels that he's not given enough credit for being a part of this. It's kind of my take on it because he posted, he literally tweeted, "F you, Damien, these are all lies. How dare you?" Essentially, how dare you claim to be responsible for getting this testing done when it's been me spearheading this whole time, me and my attorney spearheading this the whole time, and these lies and slander need to stop. And he did this big tirade about how Damien. So I'm just going to walk through, so everybody's clear of the process as I've seen it. And I feel like I can speak to this confidently because I've been right there through this process. I've been, you know, in communication with Damien at a time with Jason, Damien's attorneys. Like, I've been at the court hearing. I know what's been going on. I've been tracking this and been a part of it the whole time. So that's why I'm speaking to this, because I'm just going to tell you guys how we got to where we're at, step by step. Hey everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pregame podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining, if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So this all started when we aired when I did the docuseries, which aired in March of 2020, right as the pandemic was hitting is when it aired. We filmed it the year before that, before the pandemic. During that process, you know, we kind of identified, we're not going to solve this from some witness interview. We're not going to solve this by looking at some old crime scene photo. It's not going to be done. It's going to take science, right? And then we went to the Pure Gold Forensic Lab. We talked to them about MBAC testing. We talked to Suzanne Ryan, who suggested that we MBAC the ligatures, untie them, unback the ligatures, and that we should find skin cells there to solve the crime, right? So that comes up. Through that process, part of the journey that I was going on through the filming was getting all three defendants on board. So there was a whole, you know, arc to that where I was trying to find Jesse, who didn't live with his dad anymore, and I found Jesse, talked to him. He's like, yeah, let's test it. Damien and Jason, we got a hold of both of them. At one point, we had a Zoom with both of them together. Like, it was me talking to both of them about, you know, we want to do this MVAC testing. What do you guys think? And they're both like, yes, let's do it. Let's go for it. Everybody's on board. So then the documentary, and then, of course, the end of the series is me asking all of you to go direct with the, you know, start writing, calling, emailing Scott Ellington's office and to get him to, you know, to test the evidence because he was dodging me this whole time we were doing it, the filming. You guys did that. You stepped up. Tens of thousands of people did it, and it worked. The pressure worked. And Ellington said, you know, finally reached out to, because Damien, so let me step back. And this is where things get important and how this went down. So I'm talking to both Jason and Damien about, we need to strike while the iron's hot. There's pressure on. Let's go. Damien's like, got my attorney on it. I think it was Braga. I don't remember which attorney it was at that point. His attorney's going to, is going to contact, is start pushing and pushing and pushing. I told Jason, same thing. And he said, well, he's going to talk to his attorney, right? So Damien's attorney then makes first contact because I don't know. I can't tell you what happened with Jason and his. He said he was going to talk to his attorney, but we never heard anything else. Damien's attorney makes contact with Ellington and starts brokering a deal with Ellington to do the testing. Ellington agrees to do the testing. Ellington, and again, he's only dealing with Damien's defense team at this point. I don't know if it was Braga or Banca, two of his attorneys. I've dealt with both of them.
Yeah.
I think it was Braga, because Braga, I think, is in New York and Banca is in Arkansas. So Banca is the local attorney that handles stuff. But anyway, so then Ellington agrees to do the testing. They email me at one point. I'm the go-between between them and the lab, getting FedEx numbers to get the evidence shipped, blah, blah, blah. And then Ellington gets this judgeship and he starts ghosting us. So he goes away. Damien's attorneys are pushing at Damien's direction to push, get this stuff done. He goes and then Cressman comes in. Damien's attorneys go to Cressman and they start doing the same thing with him. He says, oh yeah, we'll do the testing. And then he says, you guys all remember this, which was, I think, 2021 at this point, is when he said, oh, the evidence is gone. It's lost. Burned up in a fire. So then again, and the reason I'm doing this is because I want to point out who is pushing this. Damien then files a FOIA request to show this as documents. When was this stuff destroyed? I want to see evidence that it was destroyed. Damien's team does that. They don't respond to it. So then they ignored it. Then Damien files, I believe it was a lawsuit is technically what it was. Basically, he sued the city of West Memphis for not responding to the FOIA request. And then that's going up to the Arkansas Supreme Court. Damien is doing that. And then meanwhile, you have Marl Leverett, who files a FOIA request with the fire department, which I still say is one of those brilliant things
genius.
That's happened in this.
Absolutely genius.
Finds out there is no fire. The courts rule that they must respond to the FOIA request. And it is starting to turn into a bigger legal situation for the city. And that's when the city says, oh, we found it. Damien's team goes to the evidence room, which is the weird place where it was kept the whole time, views the evidence. Okay, we're ready to test it. And then Cressman says, well, I'm not going to let you test it. You got to file a motion. So then Damien's team, at Damien's direction, files a motion to test the evidence. At that time, we thought that Cressman made it seem like just file the motion and I'll join the motion and we'll get it done. But you have to file a motion. So Damien files this motion and Cressman files an opposition to the motion saying we're not going to let you do the testing. Then comes June of 2022, the hearing that we went down to.
Mm-hmm.
And based on Damien's motion, we go before the judge. And then Jason did show up to that. And it was kind of a surprise to everyone.
Yeah.
Because he hadn't been involved in the process up to that, but he was there at that hearing. So he was there. And that's when the judge denied it, said, you know, by the way, the only name on that motion was Damien. And again, I'm not saying any of this to disparage Jason at all. I just want you guys to know the facts of what happened here. Damien Eccles, that case, if you look it up, is Damien Eccles versus the city of West Memphis. It was Damien that filed that motion. It was Damien's hearing. Jason was there in the audience because it affected him. It gets denied, gets kicked back, and then Damien, through his attorneys, appeals that case. And he appeals it. This process takes a whole nother year or more, all the way up to the Arkansas Supreme Court, who then remands the case. They said that the judge was incorrect, overturned the ruling, because the ruling was not you can't test the evidence. The ruling was this is out of my jurisdiction. I'm not going to hear the case. The Arkansas Supreme Court, based on the appeal that Damien filed, remands it back to the district court. Meanwhile, I'm drawing a blank on her last name. The current DA, new DA comes in. Zach's looking it up, so I'll have it here in a second. But she comes in and she gets with Damien's attorneys and says, "Okay, let's just test it. I'm willing to test it." So we got a new DA. She comes from the defense side. She's not part of the old regime. She's working with him. They're playing ball. So they start working towards doing the testing. So it was Damien's team working with her, gets her to agree to do the testing. They start getting things organized. And there was similar stuff going on then as going on now, because I had a very similar conversation with you all on the podcast at that point, because Jason started at that point was sending a bunch of tweets out saying how he was left out of the process, that no one's let him be involved. And I had said at that time, if you go back, this would be, I think we're talking 2024 at this point. I believe that's when it was. But I had said here, because it was, you know, people were asking questions. Sonia Haygood. Thank you, Zach. Sonia Haygood is the new DA. At that point, it was, how dare Damien do this without consulting me? And I had pointed out then that we had tried to get him to be a part of this at the beginning, and he was going to talk to his attorney, and we just never heard back. And it was never, well, screw Jason. It was, well, we'll just keep moving forward. And if we get the testing done, that will benefit not just Damien, but also Jason and Jesse. And I had said in that podcast, and I don't know if this had an effect, but the timing seemed about right. I said, you know, Twitter's not a real space. You know, saying on Twitter you want to be involved doesn't mean anything. If Jason wants to be involved, he can, you know, file a motion with the court and ask to be a part of the process. Shortly after that, Jason's team does get involved then. That's when they first got involved. So when Jason's team got involved in this process was after Sonia Haygood had agreed to test the evidence. And in fact, at that point, it was all set. It was going to go to Pure Gold Forensics to do the MBAC testing, which, for those of you that don't know, Pure Gold, that DNA lab, they're the ones that created the MBAC. They invented it. They have withstood fry tests all around the country. showing that it's legitimate. They train law enforcement. They train other labs on it like that. Like they are the MVAC experts. That's where it was going to go. When Jason's team came in, they said, well, we want to be a part of deciding which lab it goes to. And that slowed the process down because now there needed to be, which again, rightly, I'm not saying this shouldn't have happened. I had said it on the show, like if he wants to be involved, that's how he gets involved. And he was, he did get involved then. And so his attorney got involved then. And that's when they started working on where the DNA was going to be sent. Ultimately, they ended up sending it to Bodie Lab, which I believe is the lab that Jason's team wanted to send it to. And then it got off to sent off to Bodie. And then that leaves us to where we're at now. So the only reason I'm, again, breaking this down, and I have nothing but respect for Jason. I have nothing bad to say about him. But as far as the things he's putting out, I'm sorry. Like who has been right there throughout this entire process, do not understand why he would put out posts disparaging Damien. And then also, one, saying, how dare Damien take all the credit for this when Damien had nothing to do with that article. That wasn't Damien. He didn't say a word about it. It was George Jared's article, and he was reporting the facts about, you know, how this moved through the courts. So the fact that Damien kind of got drug into it to begin with is bad. But then also, like, just putting out onto social that, because at one point he says, at several points, he says that he's been trying to solve the case and Damien has stopped that from happening because he keeps talking about his fear of going back to prison or whatever. And I just, and you guys know, like, I'm not trying to hide my bias here. I consider Damien a friend, a good friend. You know, I've been working with the guy and working on this case with him for, 6, 7, 9 years at this point. And so I have a clear bias here but because of that, like when I see this, I'm like, dude, why are you doing this? It's not true. And it seems like that, you know, the big issue is that Damien's getting credit for doing this and Jason's not getting credit for it. But then, and Zach, you've gotten to know Damien a little bit. Yeah. The strangest part about that is the saddest part about this whole situation is if there's anybody connected to this case that does not want credit, that does not want to be on a podcast, that does not want to be talking about it at all, it's Damien Eccles.
That's correct.
He doesn't want any attention at all. And then he's constantly getting attacked for being the guy who wants all the attention, but he doesn't want, I can tell you, he doesn't. I talked to him a lot. Most of the day to day, I was talking to Damien. Does not want that attention at all on him. So, but for me, just on a factual basis, looking at, you know, saying that Damien's held up trying to solve these murders, Jason's been spearheading the whole thing in spite of Damien holding it back. That's just not true. And that's what I will say. And I hope it, you know, if this gets around to Jason, if it it's not my intention to upset him. You know, like I get it. I feel for him, respect for him, but I can't let stand that that's what happened, because the quick Reader's Digest, we're where we're at now, because after that documentary aired and there was pressure on Ellington's office, Damien pushed Ellington to do the testing. Damien, you know, all through his legal team, Damien got Ellington to agree with it. Then he left. Then Damien got Cressman to agree to it. And then Cressman said it got destroyed. And then Damien filed the FOIA request. Damien sued them for the FOIA request, which resulted in us finally finding the evidence. Damien filed the motion to do the testing. Damien got denied the motion at the hearing. Damien then filed the appeal based on that hearing that went all the way to the Arkansas Supreme Court. Damien won the battle in the Supreme Court to send it back down to be heard by the judge. Damien's team negotiated with the new DA. Damien got her to agree to go ahead and do the testing. Like, that's facts. That's the fact. That's how we got to where we're at now. So, and that's why I feel like it's worth, for me as someone who has been intimately involved in the case, who is a friend of Damien's, to say, like, the idea that Damien's been holding this process up, very, very literally, this testing is being done because of the efforts Damian has taken for the last 6 years fighting to get this. And he's been fighting to, and I guess part of what makes me defensive about it too is because I've watched how hard it's been on him. It's been very difficult for him to open these wounds up over and over again, but he's continued to push and push and push and push. And I'm not saying that the same thing wouldn't happen if, you know, maybe later Jason's team was working on it. Maybe they would have. I'm not, like, that's very possible. But the fact of the matter is we are where we are at today because Damian refused to give up. Damian continued to fight for this testing. And this is not Bob Ruff giving you an opinion. There's court records for every single one of these steps. Every one of those motions is Damian Eccles versus the state to do this. So that's as much as, probably more than I needed to, but that's as much as I'm going to say about it. So if you're seeing those posts, because, and that's the thing, is the tweets went out, that's one thing, but then everybody's sharing them everywhere and everybody is like, what's going on? Da, 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 da. So if that comes across your feed, just know that's the situation. What you do with that information is up to you, but that's what happened. That's how we got to where we're at.
Well, thank you for addressing that. I know myself as a listener, I appreciate your opinion on this. So thank you for addressing that. I know it's a tough place to come from.
Yeah, it is. And with that, I think, unless we got anything else, I think we can probably...
That is it. What do we have coming up this week, Bob?
This week we have a super interesting... I just recorded today an interview with a woman named Heather Lewis. She helps run a nonprofit program that helps supply bail to people that is part of a hub for the, I can't remember the term for it, but basically there's a national organization that helps provide bail to people. And then also they do a lot of really interesting work that involves getting families and friends and community involved pre-trial to help people prepare for the trial to know what they're getting into. We get into a lot of, you know, the massive rate of cases that get pled out as opposed to go to trial and how little the defendant actually knows about their case prior to that. It's a really super interesting conversation. Not a content creator. I just, Carl's question was asking about the next season. I am very much looking forward to getting a new case, a new season. At the same time, I'm absolutely loving from my side. I hope you guys are enjoying listening to them, doing all these episodes from my perspective, because I'm like in this position right now where if I see something interesting that's going on in the criminal justice system, or I'm wondering about something, that I can just reach out and have super interesting conversations. You know, we learned about the libraries going into the prisons. We've just learned about a whole lot of stuff that's going on. So thanks, Lilius. Lilius just said the interviews have been so great. Yeah, I'm really enjoying doing them. So it's a super interesting perspective. You're not hearing another podcaster coming up this weekend. Executive director of the Reuniting Family Bail Fund. Yes, amongst other things, which we talk all about. So make sure you tune to that on Sunday. And remember, next week, pay attention to social media, because I don't know what the schedule is going to be, because I've got a four project here. I'm going to be in New York City for the better part of next week. So at some point or another, we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kate Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review.
Doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X at Truth Justice Pod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney. And Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.